Did you know that there are over 3.2 million podcasts in the world? It seems like everybody these days has a podcast. But did you also know that 90% of those podcasts fail to make it to 20 episodes? There are various reasons for these failures, but one reason is that people don't know what they're doing. Shocking, right? As it turns out, the same reason why people don't operate on themselves also applies to podcast success. You want to talk to someone who has had success launching and marketing podcasts. Somebody like Juliana Barbati. Juliana runs a podcast marketing and production agency, and their team takes care of everything for you, making this process a breeze. All their info is in the show notes. You can go to julianabarbati.com, tell them TGFB sent you, and get a discount when paying in Bitcoin. That's right. Juliana is a Bitcoiner. Her and her husband were actually Bitcoiners before they were Christians. And so it's been great for us to work with them. They basically came to us and said, hey, we'd love to help you guys, help TGFB grow. And so we'd love to kind of apply our services to you guys. So go ahead and support them. If you have a podcast you're working on or one that you'd like to start, go ahead and check them out. Now let's get to today's show. Johnny Vance, welcome to the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Jordan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so, Johnny, it actually works out that this is mostly an audio medium because you have a voice that people might recognize. Why don't you let people know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, coincidentally. Never by a master plan did I intend to star in a cartoon. But
yeah,
I'm Johnny Vance. I play a character in the show Tuttle Twins, and I'm one of the creators of the show. So it's a show that teaches kids principles of freedom, economics, and the proper role of government.
We met out at the Pacific Bitcoin Conference, SWAN, in LA last October or something like that.
Yeah.
So we were chatting a bunch, and I just was like, man, I would love to interview you in the podcast. And so you were generous enough to do that. Okay, so you started a TV show about all these kind of things, economics, freedom. Before we get into that, you're a Christian. How did you become a Christian? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I guess for me, my parents were Christians, and they raised me that way. And I kind of grew up believing, but over time, it's like a fish swimming in water. I didn't know, what it was to not be a Christian, right?
Yeah.
And I think there was a discovery for me. I served a mission for my church, helping others come to Christ. And I think that was one of the most solidifying times in my life where I could see people not living a life and in following Jesus to changing. And you just see such a drastic difference. I've had friends who have started out raised Christian and then leaving. And I'm like, man, I just can't deny the change I see in people to before and after Christ. It's very similar, I think, to before and after Bitcoin. you can't deny the fruits of living a Christ-centered life. So that's been my journey. And now it's such a North Star for me in everything I'm doing.
So was there a point in high school or something like that? I mean, that's for a lot of us, that's kind of our story. Like, grew up in church and then kind of wandered for a while and then got to a point where you're like, oh, wow, this is...
Totally. Yeah. I'd say high school, and then I'd say just that time serving and just realizing, man, this is something I want in my life for good.
Yeah. Okay. So then you go on and, immediately after that, you go to college and then you start Tuttle Twins, right? Like, that's binary, zero to one moment.
Yeah. My life is, a straight line of I knew exactly what I wanted to do. Yeah. And yes.
So what does that look like for you? What did that look like coming out of high school? And, what did you study? What did you do?
I studied genetics and biotech. So
really?
I thought I was going to be a doctor. And my life has been a convoluted path through many things. I envy those people who are like, oh, I know exactly what I want to do. And I still don't know exactly what I want to do, but I'm enjoying the ride. So So I ended up like being pre-med. I got married. Maybe that helped me get married. It was like, oh, he's going to be a doctor. Great. Psych. I take
Rug
my
pull.
Wife. My wife was actually just been so good. She's like, I never hear you talk about medicine. I never hear you like excited about it. In fact, I fainted at the sight of blood. So that should have been a sign, right? I took this sketch writing class in college, like sketch comedy.
Yeah.
And I worked more on that class than I did any of my other classes. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. At the end of the semester, they ended up buying a sketch from me, one of my homework assignments, and they played it on this show, and it went on the show called Studio C. Anyways, so that was my first foray into, oh my gosh, I could get paid to write like funny stuff.
Yeah.
And that was so eye-opening and a turning point for me. Then I ended up doing, you know, a stint at Harmon Brothers, which yep. we were these, you know, we made funny internet ads. So if you've heard of like the Squatty Potty commercial, yes. purple mattress, you know, Lumi deodorant, anything a bit taboo.
Yeah.
That's what kind of like where I went. And it was so fun because I got to take what I learned in sketch, which was how to make things funny.
Yep.
And then we're here marrying it with education, where with Squatty Potty, we have to teach people about the colon, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe my medical degree, you know, my medical background, it helps somehow.
It all comes full circle. Okay. We're going to go several different directions here. So I would love to know what makes something funny, right? Because like all of us, again, we can like intuitively, we just hear something or we see something like that's funny. But one of the things that I found in talking to comedians, and I don't know if you would consider yourself a comedian, but again, you, at some level you are, like, have you thought about like what are the types of things that make people laugh? Like, have you thought about that at all? Like the philosophy of comedy?
You know, yeah, I have a lot, but sometimes it's literally just musical. It's yeah. just like, I find actually, if you look at like comedians like Dave Chappelle,
yeah.
they are surprisingly musical. Like they yeah. have good rhythm. They know yes. exactly, like they transition from music to comedy super
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
And there is something about that where it's all in the rhythm, like 1 second longer and the joke is dead, 2 seconds yeah. longer and the joke is hilarious. But I don't know. I think another element of comedy is surprise.
Yeah.
You know, where you just take it back, like, well, they went there or I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's so many mechanisms that we study from maybe our favorite comedies, like, oh, yeah. that's how they did this joke. But I'd say, yeah, that's what I'd say.
Yeah. So like, again, like playing, this is again, the little bit that I've thought about, like, it's just like, yeah, it comes with expectations. It's like you had one set of expectations and then the humor comes in the fact that your expectations end up getting completely twisted on its head or, you know, something along those lines. Yeah. It's fascinating to me. Okay. So you started working on comedy, you do sketch comedy stuff. You work for the Harmon Brothers, you work for, you know, Studio C. How many years did you work with them?
Yeah. So as a writer on Studio C, it was just a year and a half. And then okay. Harmon Brothers, I was there for 6 years.
Oh, wow. So, holy cow.
Yeah, okay. yeah. I kind of helped blow up. It was right when Facebook was really blowing up and YouTube. And so, like, I was like, me and my coworker, Daniel, we were like, wow, we've grown so many companies from zero yeah. to literally hundreds of millions of dollars in sales. Yeah. And we haven't owned any of that. Like, we've yeah. just done it. And yeah. so that in combination with we wanted to do original content. We were just ready for a change. Yeah. And our good friend Connor Boyack had written these kids' books
yeah.
just for his own kids
yeah.
that were like teaching them about the law and how taxation is theft
yeah.
in, you know, kid-friendly
yeah.
terms.
yeah.
And they'd sold 1 million copies. And we were like, whoa, okay, this could be an opportunity. So at yeah. this point, Angel Studios had launched The Chosen, and that was the only original content show that they'd launched, and it had done incredibly well through the crowd. The crowd had funded it.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, what if we could take your books, Connor, we could adapt them to a show, and we could offer this to the crowd and see if they'd want to come and
yeah.
invest in the project. And yeah. so that's what we did. We created a little animatic. We put it out in the crowd, and we said, well, what do you want to invest? And, you know, at that time, I think the fiat money system, you know, money was easy.
and, yeah. Yeah.
And also, it was right before COVID. I think people were just hungry for this kind of content.
Yeah.
And we ended up breaking a record for crowdfunding a kid show. We
oh my gosh.
Surpassed Netflix as the number one crowdfunded kid show ever. So wow. it was it was like super awe-inspiring, and we were just taken aback and like, oh my gosh, parents want us to do this.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, that's part of the thing. I mean, this is, again, why I was interested in you guys, too, is there's a lot of kids programming out there, and so much of it is just, so we homeschool, and so there's a woman who, like, she was, like, an Anglican lady who lived, like, 150, 200 years ago. Her name was Charlotte Mason, and she talks about there's different types of books. There's one group of books that's called living books. Like, these are books that, you know, they're aligned with who you are, and, like, they help build you. They help you step into what it means to be human, and then there's other books that are, like, twaddle. It's just like these are books that are designed, like, they don't help form you. They kind of gnaw away at you and like take away from who you are. And so much of children's books are just twaddle. They're not actually helping. Like, they're just designed to, like, you know, go to the lowest common denominator, and they're just super basic and just kind of dumb. And they're not, again, they're not building in taking seriously the fact that they're actually what the potential for books is. It's to shape people and to form minds and to help them grow into people who will be productive parts of society, productive parts of families. And so, again, the fact that you guys are taking that seriously, again, still done in the comical way, but like you're smuggling in there and helping to teach these really important concepts that are neglected in school, I just think is super valuable. There's so little education on economics. There's so little education, you know, for a lot of these things. And so for you guys to be creating resources for, you know, the youngest kids out there, I think is just really incredible. Has there been takeaways? Obviously the surprise at the demand for it, but have there been other things that have surprised you as you've worked on the show?
Yeah, we get surprised often. And I think if you're doing entrepreneurship right, you're often surprised at how often you're wrong, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, we've been blown away at, I mean, it really is just chances at bat. We've had, you know, 26 episodes so far, and some that I thought would do super well haven't, and others have just taken off. So like we've had the Inflation Monster episode. It's been a breakout for us.
Really?
Where to the point of kids are complaining to their parents at Costco that the prices are too high. They're like, inflation, the inflation monsters hit this too, right?
Let's go.
I think going through this, I thought kids are kids, and maybe some of these concepts will go over their head, but I think kids are so much smarter than we give them credit for.
Yes.
And we just dumb down entertainment.
Correct.
And we dumb down education for them. And we don't think, you know, they could grasp inflation or central planning, but they can. And so we take books like The Creature from Jekyll Island and we make it suitable for kids like you're talking about. And another thing is, I don't know, like the other thing, the industry of kids entertainment is they literally will sneak in stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they'll sneak in their own agenda. And I think what I've been caught that surprised me is we've told parents everything that's in the show. And we even vet the show by parents before we release it. And we have to pass a guild score with Angel. It's a really cool model that they have.
Cool.
So we work hand in hand with parents. And then we tell them, this is what's in the episode. Take it or leave it. And they take, you know, the people who love it, take it. And so it's just like, it's a different model that has worked super well. And parents, you know, it's like, we're not going to hide anything. We're upfront. And if you believe in these principles and you want to use it as a tool for your homeschooling, for your family, great. If not, it's a free market. Choose whatever you want.
That's awesome, man. Okay. So you said the inflation one is the surprising one, just how much that's caught on. What are some of the ones that you thought maybe were going to do well that just did?
I mean, everyone has had varying levels of success, but let's see. We had an episode on freedom of speech that didn't do as well.
And, okay. You know, till now, because we're going to turn this around.
Till
we're going to be like, hey.
Guys, go check out episode 11 of season one. That's
right.
The one you
know. Or we're just going to reaffirm that, y'all dropped. Freedom of speech.
Yeah. Let's see. We had one on entrepreneurship. It's okay to be wealthy. Through entrepreneurship if you're serving people, and that one maybe didn't do as well as I was hoping, but it is interesting that like we'll post clips in a different way or cut it in a different way and it will go bonkers. So we could be sitting on entrepreneurship. You're just one test away from
correct I could see that. And some of these things, I mean, we're constantly, as I have conversations with pastors and, you know, Christian, just normal people all the time about Bitcoin and stuff, I'm constantly like A/B testing, trying to figure out like what are useful things, like what are arguments that help people make sense of this, and what are less, you know, less helpful ones. And you never know, because like there's some people who, you know, like, hey, this argument really helps and helps to crystallize things. And then there's other people who that just doesn't do it at all. And so sometimes like what I'm constantly trying to find is, all right, what is the foundational thing that once you establish that, then kind of it makes everything else level to where, okay, now we're on a level playing field. Now we can make sense of some of these things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe it could be just that, you know, this inflation episode is one of these things that just kind of opens people's eyes and like turns a screw in their head so that, you know, they see the world differently. And then some of these other things in the future, you know, will be more desirable. Okay. So what does the creative process look like for you in terms of, you know, creating an episode? How long does it generally take to do an episode? I mean, how many people are involved? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so before I stepped into the world of creating cartoons, I had no clue. I thought, you know, they could whip out cartoons in a month or something, which maybe AI will help us do that in the future. But but yeah, for us, we spend a lot of time on the writing phase with our show. So we'll start with the concepts. And like I said before, we run these by parents where we're like, what do you want to teach your kids? Hey, vote on what do you think is the most pressing lesson. And then parents will do that. We'll take those concepts. We'll find research or books that we can kind of dig deeper on to make sure that we're just airtight on the data and on what we want to teach kids. And then from there, it takes about 7 months before we release the episode. So
Before you release the episode.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. That so writing, we take longer than most shows just because we want it to, you know, we lean on the writing. We get comedians and a lot of people who are just good storytellers. And then we just iterate and we run it through for several weeks. And then we make it into what's called an animatic. So they're just like the moving storyboards.
Sure.
And then we'll finally do it into the animation that you see on Tuttle Twins.
Yeah, man, it reminds me. So I interviewed a theologian named Alistair Roberts a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things we were talking about was the pace of production for things on the internet. He's like, if you look at the internet over time, it seems like the attention spans get shorter and shorter and the content just continues to get compressed in terms of like, so you go from long form video to, you know, something like TikTok, you know, where it's just these short little things. And so he's like, he just feels the pressure all the time, release podcasts that are longer form. But like, you know, all the time you're sitting there like, all right, how can I compress this? How can I produce more content? All these things. And really, I find myself, I am much more of a longer form content producer. And so being on social media and there being people who are much more, you know, producing many more things, to me, it's like, what is this? I'm like, oh man, you know, I wish I was producing more. But at the same time, like if you're producing good things, then it does take longer. It does take longer to go through. And especially when you're like, you're not just trying to express these own ideas that you have, you're trying to incorporate ideas from books or from other people. And so that just involves a lot more time to, again, like you're saying, do the work to figure out, to clarify, is this what you were saying? You know, am I understanding this correctly? You know, what doing the due diligence, I think, is something that, you know, you guys are to be commended for. Again, it's way easier and faster to, you know, just to, and then on top of that, you have got Connor's work, right? You've got these books that you're trying to be faithful and true to. And let me ask you that. What does that relationship look like? You know, what has the relationship been between the books and the show? And then, yeah, just your creative relationship with Connor.
Yeah, great question. So, yeah, Connor had obviously established such a compelling and trustworthy foundation where he was using, essentially adapting, you know, human action into a kid's book and all these Austrian economists, you know, breaking them down to kids level. And so that was so instrumental. And we pitched Connor when we said with the show, we said, let us create the MCU, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe of the comics. And that clicked. And so they are different universes. We've adapted the show to be, you know, to compete with other kids' shows.
Sure, yeah.
And the books definitely go heavier and deeper on the education than we can in the show. But that being said, Connor's involved with every single episode as an executive producer, and he helps us hone that message and make sure that it's, you know, true and airtight with the data.
Okay, so I'm going to go more into that. So I wrote a kid's book. Me and a friend of mine wrote a kid's book. And again, it was one of the most enjoyable and challenging and great and hard and all these things, just because, again, we are different people. And so we worked well together on some things. We basically had corresponding strengths and weaknesses. And so, but there were points where we complement each other in a lot of ways, but there were points where we just differed a lot. You know, we had very different perspectives. He's worked in Hollywood. He's worked on even like kids shows, cartoons and stuff. And so we just had, there were points of just philosophical difference. So like, have you guys run into the same kind of things, whether it's you and Connor or just you and you guys within yourselves? Like, what are some of the more common run-ins that you guys have?
Yeah, we have it all the time. I think in any creative, you know, field, you're going to have those creative differences. In the end, we resolve them. I mean, sometimes it's unintentional where it's like we made a stand where we said, we're going to make this family a loving family. We're going to make the dad not an idiot, you know, and we're going to, you know, there are things and we're going to make it so we won't have woke garbage in the show.
Correct.
And you'd be surprised at how much, I mean, not all our writers are like conservative or libertarian. Yeah. Some of them are a little left-leaning. And so sometimes stuff gets into the writer's room and we're like, guys, no, this is not that show. Yeah. This is not that show. And then nothing Disney level. But but it's just stuff that creeps in and then you have to pull it back. And I don't know. I think our North Star really is our audience. Like we would not be a show without the crowd supporting us. And so we are accountable to them.
Yeah.
And we can't just make garbage and we can't just make whatever everyone else is making. We have to make a different show.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think, recognizing that that's a big part of the success that you guys have is because you guys have drawn such a line of distinction between you guys and other shows. I think that that's, again, I'm a parent and it's constantly, it's just so frustrating to try to be watching something and then you're like, all right, everybody close your eyes. That's right. It just gets exhausting.
Sesame Street's gone off the deep end.
Exactly. That, you know, that Cookie Monster, his gluttony, he's just, The TGFB podcast is brought to you by the TGFB 24 conference. Thank God for Bitcoin 2024 is happening July 24th and 25th in Nashville. This conference brings together some of the best minds in the church, the academy, and in Bitcoin to explore the biblical foundations and daily consequences of how money affects the incentives and outcomes of the world we live in. The name of the conference this year is Render to God, Stewardship, Dominion, and the Economics of Glory. We figured that an election year was the perfect time to examine the relationship between God, government, and money. We'll dive deep into what the Bible has to say about what money is, the role it plays in society, and why the principles governing money creation have such a huge and yet underappreciated effect on every aspect of our world. I'll be speaking alongside pastors and respected Christian figures like C.R. Wiley, Thomas Terry, Eric Hirschman, Glenn Sunshine, and many more. Tickets are limited, so use promo code TGFB24 to save 10% today before prices increase. You can also, for a limited time, if you would like to bring your wife with you, we would love for you to do that. We would love husbands to be able to bring their wives, and so we are offering 80% off tickets for wives who want to accompany their husbands. So that means you can get two tickets today for $300 by using promo code COUPLE at checkout at tgfb.com/store. Go ahead, run over and do that. We'd love to have husbands and wives together to talk about these very important topics. This is a one-of-a-kind community experience at the intersection of theology, technology, ethics, finance, and economics. We hope to see you there. Okay, back to the show. How has your process maybe evolved over time? Like, what does that look like? Maybe, are there things that you guys do differently now than you did in the beginning? I'm sure you guys have learned a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Like, have you guys brought in new writers over time? Is that kind of different every season, or what does that look like?
Yeah, we've definitely expanded our writing and, you know, gotten people from different points of view. And I think, man, we've learned so much through trial and error. I think as we've grown with the show, we've gotten more guest stars that can align with the show. And one thing we found is, man, so I was at a conference called Freedom Fest last summer, and I was just listening in the audience, and it was up in the air what we were going to do and teach about in season three. And Mike Rowe got up on stage and he sings a song, which I didn't know he could do. And then he just has this whole spiel on how college isn't what's being sold to kids and how there are many blue collar jobs that are paying six figures and are actually allowing kids to progress. And so that was an interesting aha for me, where it's like, oh my gosh, if we can align ourselves, like, this is an amazing message. It seems like Mike Rowe just wrote an episode for us.
Yeah. Executive producer, Mike Rowe.
That's right. I approached him and I said, hey, do you want to do a cartoon? And he said, let's do it. And so I think that that's been an aha for me, when you can align incentives and there's something is organically and authentically somebody's platform, then we can supercharge that platform with our show. And so that was like an aha for me. And we've had so many different ahas in this process of growing the show. What we realized with social media was, it wasn't the most entertaining stuff that went viral for us. It was the most educational stuff.
Yeah.
And so we released, you know, clips on our Bitcoin episode that went bonkers.
Yeah.
And just people coming out of the woodwork saying, I'm, you know, in my mid 30s and I'm finally understanding Bitcoin, things like that. Like,
yeah,
so your, like,
Bitcoin,
whoa,
your Bitcoin episode was fantastic. Like, just again, this, seeing all the same, like, the clips, like, again, I'm like, man, this is the most succinct, succinct explanation as I've seen. I had a professor in college, and he basically said, like, if you can't explain something so that a child can understand it, like, you don't actually understand it. If you can't articulate something so a child can understand it, you don't actually understand it yourself. And so I think that you guys are just bearing out the fact that you guys understand through lots of work and, you know, frustration and throwing things at each other. And, you know, like, you guys are working to basically get to the point where you can make sure that, you know, you guys actually do understand these things. Has this been something where, I mean, you're saying, like, you guys are finding more people, you're learning yourself. Like, how has it affected your writers to go through the process of, you know, again, if there's people who, you know, haven't come from these Austrian economic background or, you know, necessarily liberty background. Has that been something that over time, you know, you've seen you guys grow, like your writers grow and appreciate?
Yeah. We have this amazing center left leaning writer, and she's from LA. And once we got past some of these buzzwords down to the deeper level, she's super convicted. Central planning is bad. and all of these, you know, you get past socialism, you get past capitalism, you look under the hood, and when you do, it's mind-blowing. And so we've seen so many shifts. I would say the writers, us writers that wrote on that first Bitcoin episode, like I was like a crypto fan before that, but I came out writing that episode as a hardcore Bitcoin maximalist, like just reading Safety's book, The Bitcoin Standard, and writing an episode about it. I was like, oh my gosh, what have I been doing? And it's incredible. Yeah, when you break it down to a level of a kid, the side effect is you learn, parents learn, like adults are freaking becoming orange-pilled because of this. So it's just mind-blowing. If you want to learn something well, learn how to teach it to others.
And a great way to learn is by having kids, all right? So go have kids, everyone. That's the lesson for today. But no, honestly, that's been, for me, that's been one of these things is I have four kids, and so we have conversations. And there's been tons of things where my kids will ask me something and I'm like, oh, you know, I know how this is. I know how this works. And then I start to explain it. And I'm like, all right, I know. Again, I have like buzzwords in my head. I'm like, I need to figure out, okay, what's actually at the root of these things? And again, that's just not how education broadly works. That's not how most education works, especially, again, when you have something like the No Child Left Behind bill, you know, that got passed by George Bush. Again, well-intentioned, like we want to help kids not get left behind. We want to help them learn. But then it just puts so much pressure on the teachers to like get their kids to pass this test that like there's so many schools, they're just geared around preparing the students for the test. And so it's not actually, they're not actually learning in the ways that they should be learning, because like the TLOS is wrong. Like the goal of this thing has gotten misconstrued and you know, messed up. And so it's really just affecting the education itself. Are there episodes that are still on your white whale episodes? You're like, oh man, we didn't get to them in seasons 1, 2, 3. You know, there's still things down the road. Or, you know, what's the stuff that maybe you're like, I don't know if our audience is ready for this, or I don't know if we're ready for this. But are there other things like that coming down the pipe?
Yeah, our white whale episode is the overpopulation myth.
So you're waiting on Elon.
Let's go. That's what we want. So we actually just partnered with the Cato Institute, and they have this book called Superabundance.
Yes.
And it goes into all the hard data all around why the world is getting more abundant despite rampant government spending and inflation.
Yep.
And why it's, you know, with every kid that's born, innovation increases. And humans are not rats. We're not going to eat each other.
Correct.
Like, we are going to solve problems with every kid, and you should be thanking the dad who has five kids, the woman who's at the grocery store, you know, with three kids. So that's the white whale episode. I think I'm just, you know, forecasting or throwing it out there that, fingers crossed, we could get Elon on that episode.
Come on, Elon.
Either on the episode or sharing the episode. But that's kind of the white whale episode.
I'm sure Elon listens to this show. So Elon, go ahead. You know, come on, help him.
That's right.
Okay, super into
God, super into Bitcoin.
He's getting there, man. He posts some stuff where I'm like, he's trying to figure it out. Okay, so the overpopulation thing. Yeah, I guess, are there other things, like other issues like that you're like, man, this is still pretty, you know, again, you guys are building out a foundation. You guys are trying to do some basic things. And then as you're seeing, wow, people are more into this. Like, what are some other issues that you guys are looking at?
Thinking about? Great question. So I think one, we'll run this by our audience, but one I'd love to do would be parent rights versus government, you know, and how often in societies you see governments want to parent kids. And you see that in the school system. You saw that with Hitler Youth. You saw that in you know, USSR. And so I think that's an interesting one. I think we'll do one on jury nullification. I think it's not necessarily something that people are opposed to. It's just people don't know that if there's a bad law, the jury can decide not to enforce it. The power's in the people, especially as Bitcoiners, you know, if they come after self-custody, this could be paramount to us winning some of those things. If the jury decides that's unconstitutional, you've seen it throughout history. And so that's something we're wanting to do. I'd say another one coming this season, we have one on the military-industrial complex and just breaking it down that we should not be incentivizing death and destruction. And we'll have another episode, a sequel to our Bitcoin episode. Our Bitcoin episode has probably been our biggest breakout.
Yeah.
It definitely has, with almost 40 million views. And so
That's
we're doing a sequel this season, breaking down CBDCs and breaking down how Bitcoin is money no one can control. So, I mean, I would say like each Bitcoin episode, we knew before we created that one that our audience was 100% aligned with the money's broken. We just weren't sure how people would react to Bitcoin is the solution. And so I would say we'll get some pushback from some of our audience with this episode, but hopefully enough alignment with, okay, I can agree with half the episode. Maybe I'll look into Bitcoin more. So,
we can start there. That's a good place to be. Yeah. I think one of the things that is like, we are at this point of definitional crisis of like, we don't know what things are. And this comes down to like the most basic fundamental level of like, again, like, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? What is government? Like, what are the responsibilities of government, and what things are outside of governmental, you know, responsibilities? And so all of these questions, like, what is marriage? All of these things, like, it's when we see these things that are such hot button issues out in the world, it's really like this cry for help. It's like this alarm that's just basically saying, we don't know what's going on. And I think a big part of the reason why we don't know what's going on is because we've gotten away from these deeper questions. And it's been easy. It's just been easy because of the monetary abundance that we've had. Like, it's just, oh, we'll just talk about that later. Oh, you know, we'll talk about that later. Oh, that's divisive. And so we can't talk about that now. And I think that what we see is like, it's the fruit of putting off those conversations for years and years and years. And now you're going into generations. And so I think that the more, again, what you guys are doing is you're having these larger level conversations that are forcing people to reckon with some of these questions and some of these assumptions that they've had. Because that's the thing, is like, some of these things, they're so intuitive, like they seem so obvious. And yet what we're finding is that even something as seemingly, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something as seemingly obvious as gender, really, for based on, you know, where the world, it's not as obvious. There's whole segments of the population to whom it's not obvious. And so I think that, you know, these questions of authority and the questions of how do we know, of like epistemological questions, I think these are huge things that, again, that, you know, the sooner that, you know, kids and that just people more broadly can start realizing that, hey, everyone has epistemological assumptions about how they can know things, about what is the standard of evidence, what are the standards of evidence that help us to know things. I think that, you know, reckoning with that reality is something that we really need. And, you know, so I guess what I'm saying right now is I'm shilling for the epistemology episode of the Tuttle Twins. Because, like, again, this is something of like standards of evidence. Something is similar, like there's a lot of, I get in conversations all the time about the difference, lack of, you know, the trustworthiness or lack thereof of the relationship between science and faith. And so one of the things that we get into in having this conversation is that there's two different standards of evidence. There's scientific standards of evidence, and then there's also like historical standards of evidence. And they're vastly different. They're like two hands on a body, and neither one of them is better or worse than the other. They're just different. And so I can't demonstrate that any of the founding fathers of the United States lived scientifically. I can't do that. You know, I don't have DNA. You know, from they lived too long ago. Nobody who's alive has seen them. I have to rely on historical evidence. And that is a different standard of evidence than scientific is. And so I just think that a lot of these kind of issues like that are something that we need people who are creating content and doing this kind of work to explain on a basic level for the benefit of kids, but as you're finding, even for the benefit of the adults who, you know, who haven't had that education, they're still going to benefit just like the kids themselves are. So I think there's something else really interesting and inappropriate about, you know, your success and the success you guys have seen. You know, I just think about the verse where Jesus says, unless you become like a child, you can't inherit the kingdom. And so obviously, you know, we're not intended to be children forever in some senses, but in another sense, we are supposed to be children forever. And so, you know, you guys working to create episodes that enable, basically help to foster this childlike curiosity and willingness to question what we think we know and you know, the what is underneath the problems that we face around the world, I think is just really great. So thank you for what you guys are doing. Is there anything else that you want to kind of lay out for the audience, like other things that are important to you guys as you're, you know, as you're going into making each episode or maybe just this season? Is there certain things that you guys want people to take away?
Yeah. I would say, I mean, what you just touched on, just being curious, questioning, looking under the hood, that's a central theme of our show is just questioning and being, having critical thinking. And I don't know, I mean, it's often that the longer I've been at this, the longer I've realized how little I know and how on the surface, what sounds bad is often good. And what sounds good can often be bad. And, you know, it is a cloud of confusion around us in politics now. And if you live surface level, you can actually be participating in great evil without knowing about it, you know, and it, or be complicit, you know. And I think, it's just, it's an honor to be able to be put in this position where we can build this platform, where we can say things that Hollywood won't, we can say things that school systems and governments won't. And if that sounds like something you'd be interested in helping us do, come join the Tuttle fans. Come, you can watch the show for free at angel.com/Tuttle Twins. And then you could actually help shape the show, which is just something that no other show that I know of, you know, does. So help vote on episodes, help tell us what not to put in the show. Help tell us, you know, what you want your kids to learn and you haven't been able to get through to them, or what you like to learn yourself. And that's, it's a very collaborative show with parents. So
the way that people would do that to actually help shape it is it joining the guild? Is that kind of how that
So join the Angel Guild. It's Angel is really kind of trying to outcompete them and really beat the Hollywood model, where traditionally movies and shows have been greenlit by a small group of gatekeepers, and they decide what your kids watch. And that should be infuriating, you know, and that is infuriating. I think we're all feeling the effects of central planning of our kids' content. And so what Angel does is they allow the audience to come in. You pay a monthly fee to watch new episodes, to get movie tickets to new movies, and then to actually shape the show, where you get to watch early episodes, you get to vote on things, you get to green light good, or you get to, you know, red light bad.
And so, for instance, so the way that I just was on your, on the website looking at, so if you pay, is it like, it's like $20 a month or something like that? Or
That's one tier. I think the lowest tier is $12 a month.
12. Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. So you do that, and then you can watch all of the season three episodes of Tuttle Twins, and then a bunch of other stuff. You can watch that today. Right. And then if you don't, so like you guys have the micro episode from season three, you guys have it up to be able to watch right now. And then the other ones, they do become available for just anybody to stream, I think like in October or November is the first
eventually,
one.
Eventually. Yeah. Eventually. In a few months. Yeah.
So so audience, go out there and support these guys. Get some more good content for your kids. Man, I'll tell you what would be another good episode would be like nullification more broadly, like where states basically say to the federal government, this law isn't constitutional, and so we're not going to obey these laws. And so you've seen it. You've seen it with like some of the like marijuana legislation, like marijuana still. Illegal on like a federal level, but every state's just basically saying, you know, I don't know if they're actually officially going through nullification. They're just basically saying, we're not going to do it. And so, it hasn't been used a ton.
It'll be interesting if we do get a CBDC, how that might play out, you know, with states' rights. You know, you have some states that have already banned CBDCs on their state's laws. And so it'll be a fight.
Exactly. Yeah. You're seeing Texas. I know Texas. I was just talking with somebody who is working in Texas to do something similar. I think they're probably one of the ones who've banned. If anybody's going to ban something the government's done, it's probably Texas. But but so, okay, let me just ask you this. Have you guys thought about doing episodes about like religions?
I'm sure
that would be super controversial, but.
We have an episode this season on freedom of religion.
Okay.
That's coming out. But it's interesting. We tried to be authentic to historical figures like George Washington believes in God and believes that God has guided his work. Ben Carson is in an episode coming up on the fatherless epidemic. And he is very Christian and believes that God has helped raise him. But we're not specifically like a Christian or religious show. We try and let parents raise their kids however they like. But that being said, so we do have this episode all about freedom of religion and how government should respect our right to believe however we want. It's essentially freedom of speech. And so I'd say in the future, we'll probably continue down that path where, but if there is an aspect of religion where it makes sense for us to do it, and we can do it in a way that can be freedom-minded and true, I think we're all down to do it. I mean,
I'm just like trying to think of like, what would that look like? That would be very challenging. And then you're like, but yeah, I do think that even just like recognizing, I mean, something just like the philosophical and religious foundations of the country. I think, you know, if, right. you know, we're primarily, I would imagine the majority of your customers are in the States, but like, I'm sure you guys have people from all over the world watching stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. We have Brazil, a big population in Brazil really? Watching. Yeah.
So has Brazil been the biggest surprise for you? Are there other countries where you've been?
Yeah. I think Brazil has caught me off guard the most. We translated the show into Portuguese, you know, and obviously in Spanish, we have a fair amount in South America too.
Okay.
Argentina, you know, all these places that I think are feeling the pain of some of these economic policies more than we are. Yeah, but US, Canada, Australia, they're big watchers too.
So. Oh man. Well, I'm so happy. Australia right now, I just watched a clip of them trying to convince their people to vote in a CBDC. And they're saying, hey, if you vote in the CBDC, if you make it law, then we'll have a fair trial. But then we can actually test to see if it's good or not. And you're just like, what?
We'll be the guinea pigs.
Exactly. Yeah. Vote to be the guinea pig, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Well, most of the countries in the world are either piloting or they've greenlit a CBDC right now. So that was something that was just mind-blowing in my research for this upcoming Bitcoin episode. So, yeah, it is a genie that we cannot put back in the bottle if it comes out. It'll be very hard.
Yeah. What's been your favorite episode so far? I mean, I'm sure, like, obviously the one that does that's successful, I'm sure that one feels good. But like, are there particular ones where you had an outsized role, like it was more your idea or something like that or maybe not?
I would say my favorite one that I'm most proud of would be the civil disobedience episode. So we did an episode about that. And
is that this season 3 or which season?
No, season 1, season 1, episode 9. So and you can watch, by the way, viewers, you can watch seasons 1 and 2 for free. It's just season 3 that you'll need to join the guild to watch. But that one, it just follows, you know, all the great and good that's been done through civil disobedience. And we taught kids, you know, if you disagree with the law, you can break it. Just be prepared to accept the consequence and do it peacefully. And, you know, we had people, it was right during the pandemic that we released it. We had people refusing to wear masks in their school and being sent to the principal's office. And these just like, these kids.
And they're like, Johnny Vance told me that I didn't have to obey.
They paid the price, you know, and these kids just are so, so, you know, inspirational to me. We also had kids who refused to clean their room, and they said, Tuttle Twins taught me, and their mom said, what? No. You know, and then they paid the consequence of being grounded or, you know, the corporal punishment.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
Yeah, but that one. And what we follow Harriet Tubman and just the amazing, you know, things she did. And then I think kids extrapolated to today. So it was very cool and gratifying to see.
All right. So here's a question for you. All right. So do your kids like Tuttle Twins? Are they fans of it?
Yeah, they love Tuttle Tuesdays. That's when we release episodes. Tuttle Tuesdays. My kid the other day, he's 5. He had just a light bulb moment where he was like, the inflation monster is so bad, Daddy. And then he said, people must know about Bitcoin. They must know.
Let's go.
And I'm like, he gets it to some level, you know, and he's asking to be paid in Bitcoin for chores. And you know, I think, it's just super cool to see that kids, even at 5, can understand, at least to their level, sound economic principles.
And just for our audience's sake, we will actually be having Johnny's son next week on the Thank God for Bitcoin.
Right.
What is it like having a daddy who educates about Bitcoin? There we go.
That's right.
Well, cool. We'll leave it right there for right now. But again, hopefully this won't be the last time we have you on. We'll have you on once I get to see this new episode. Just tell everybody who's from the Bitcoin community who's going to be on this second Bitcoin episode.
Yeah, so we're stacking it. We got Natalie Brunell. I think we got Peter McCormack coming on from What Bitcoin did, of course. And then we have, Feature Sailor. He won't be able to voice himself, but we have Safedean, Amos, and then the Kaisers, BTC Sessions. Yeah, we're...
Let's go! No way! I don't know if
that was on there. Got a bunch of people who are doing a bunch of cool stuff. I think we even have Robert Breedlove cameo in a barrel. We have him in an ice barrel somewhere, so don't tell him. Don't tell him. I want him to be surprised by it.
Don't tell him as he listens to this episode of The Bucket. But
Robert?
Sorry, Robert.
Stay in your lane, Robert.
Stay in your barrel. All right.
Stay in your barrel.
Johnny Vance, thank you so much, man. Appreciate what you're doing. And again, hopefully we'll chat soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Jordan.
Our mission at TGFB is to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. We do this through podcasts, books, consulting services, and live events. We love giving away as much of our resources as possible, but we do have real overhead costs. And there are a number of easy ways that you can help us keep the lights on to continue our mission. First, if you're a Bitcoiner, you can listen to the podcast on the Fountain app and stream us sats in real time as you listen to the podcast. Every contribution makes a difference, no matter how small. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/TGFB to receive a number of special benefits available only to our Patreon supporters. If you find these conversations valuable, you can also help spread the word by sharing this episode, subscribing on YouTube, and leaving reviews on Apple and Spotify. Leaving us good reviews goes a long way toward ensuring that the algorithmic powers that be look favorably on our humble endeavors. And finally, engage with us on social media. Join the conversation so that we can build a strong community united around faith, freedom, and sound money. We mentioned the TGFB 24 conference on July 24th and 25th in Nashville. You can go grab your tickets at tgfb.com/store. And finally, go check out julianabarbati.com if you have questions about how to start or better your own podcast. We're grateful for your support, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.